We don't use video Skype though, because you've got a bit of a slow internet connection at your end, don't you? You have to pedal extra hard, and you know, to get the things running. So we don't get to see each other. So what we should actually do is exchange photos of each other to see what we look like on the day.
I think we keep it anonymous, David. Honestly, you wouldn't want to see me at the moment, and likewise, I don't really want to see you. Only joking, mate.
Ladies and gentlemen, the next event on the card is a heavyweight marketing bout for the small to medium business owner. In the red corner, from Paradise, Australia, is David. And in the blue corner, from an English paradise, is David.
Hello and welcome along. You've joined us again in paradise. Yep, this is David versus David, the podcast for the small to medium business owner who's sitting out there thinking, am I alone? Well, you're not alone, because at least David and David are here to help you out. If you've got questions when it comes to advertising and marketing, we have the answers for you. And I'm David Council here in beautiful Paradise, Tasmania, and over on the other side of the world
is David Pritchard from a very sunny and beautiful UK at the moment. Of course, it's just heading towards the end of our summer, I suppose. We maybe have 3 or 4 weeks left of September, nice weather, and then it slowly drifts into autumn and darker evenings, and we all start hibernating maybe. But so how are you, David?
I'm really well, mate, actually. And what about you?
Yeah, doing good. Like I say, enjoying summer. It always makes people bright and breezy. So it's good over here at the moment, and business is good and working hard. So
for those who don't realise it, we record this over Skype. We don't use video Skype though, because you've got a bit of a slow internet connection at your end, don't you? You have to pedal extra hard, and you know, to get the things running. So we don't get to see each other. So what we should actually do is exchange photos of each other to see what we look like on the day.
I think we keep it anonymous, David, honestly. You wouldn't want to see me at the moment. And likewise, I don't really want to see you. Only joking, mate.
I still have this picture of you, you know, with your bowler hat and your umbrella and your Times tucked under the arm. Maybe a nice, you know, sort of overcoat on. No.
That image surely died of Britain about 25, 30 years ago, maybe.
Yes, it's a bit sort of that was the week there was, that was sort of British image, yes. So, anyway.
No, that was all the 60s and 70s, and well, before then, I guess. And I'd like to say just a little bit before my time. Certainly just a bit before I became aware of that kind of thing, anyway.
Well, so, it actually leads us into what we're going to talk about today, which is research, surveys, and testing and measuring your results. Because clearly, if I'd done my research better, I would know that that's not the way they look in England these days. It's all hoodies. Last time I was in England, everybody was getting around in a hoodie.
It depends what time of year it is, David, I think, as well.
Summer, I thought.
But yeah, you know, how do you do your research? You ask.
That's
you?
Right. And you've got to keep that line of communication open to your customers, regardless of how long you've been in business. I think it's very easy to sort of slip into a comfort zone when you're in business and you think that you know everything about everybody. But the reality is that, you know, customers, they're in sort of flux all of the time, and what they need and what you can help them with changes as the days pass. I mean, let's face it, 6 years ago, there was no such thing as an iPhone. So we were all carrying around mobile phones that were just used for texting and sending the occasional phone conversation between people. And, you know, that's a very short period of time for that change. And if the telephone companies hadn't kept up to date, they would have gone out of business. In fact, look how many of them have gone out of business. I remember the very first mobile phone that I had, you had to carry around a little bag with the phone clicked onto the side of it. It was like carrying around an ammo box. Really, I suppose when I used mobile phones at my biggest usage when they first came out, Nokia was the big brand.
That's right. Yeah, indeed. I mean, that is very interesting, actually, how the brands have changed over time. In the early 90s, when I got my first mobile, it was, I think, Motorola were everywhere with their flip phones and so on. Then I think Sony and really became Nokia for a long time. Say they lost track a little bit maybe of what the market was after. And then you had all the Sony Ericssons and so on took over the market a little bit more. And then Apple and Samsung and the Android guys have really dominated the last few years. And I know some people have particular affections for their brand and so on, even allowing for that and the fact that, you know, some people will never move away from a Nokia or never leave their BlackBerry behind or whatever. In general, you know, the trends of the world have changed over the last 15 years or so, from one make to another, as technology has changed and people have adapted their requirements to take advantage of that technology.
And that's why research is so important. And I think sometimes, especially, in fact, every level of business, sometimes people don't do research because they're a little bit frightened of what the results might be, that they might hear something that they really would be uncomfortable in knowing about themselves or about their business. You've really got to take a step back and hear what people have to say, take it on board, and use it as a method to grow your business. Because otherwise, you could be left behind.
Well, and also, depending what the nature of your business is, I'm assuming it would probably be fair to say that most of our listenership here are head honchos of major global mobile phone manufacturers and so on. Maybe we'll get to the right kind of level here. But, you know, if you run a local business, if you run a restaurant, if you run a garage services, there are a couple of the ones we often talk about. But, you know, you have different facets of your business that you really well advise to get feedback on and monitor what's going on, because there's things going on that can really affect the future livelihood of the business and you. If you're a cafe and you do great food and you've got your opening times right and everything else is right, apart from a couple of staff members that interact with the public and don't exude any warmth or anything like that, people will find other places to go and they'll be switched off by one thing. Well, if you had feedback on that one thing, it might not be comfortable to read about it, but you'd know you had to do something. Research, feedback, surveys like that can be really, really important.
Mm. Now, let me give you an example of a company. You've mentioned mechanics, one that we work with. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And by doing research, he actually saved himself money when it came to his advertising and marketing. Now, obviously, you've got to ask the questions at the right time. You know, don't have someone necessarily come to your counter and bombard them with a survey to fill out. It's got to be an appropriate time. So what we did for this company was we actually set up an autoresponder so that he captured their email address as part of their transaction. They went home, and within 3 days of them having the car serviced at his business, they received an email that had this questionnaire attached. One of the good things was even if they didn't fill out the whole survey, he got as much of the survey as they actually filled out. So it also helped him develop a better strategy for his surveying so that he was able to improve that process as well. But we were asking questions not just about customer service. We were asking questions about the customer. We needed to know what television programs that they watched. Did they in fact watch television? Do they listen to radio? What sort of times of the day did they listen to radio? You know, were they newspaper consumers? Because we used that to save money by then focusing his marketing messages into those particular television programs or radio stations. And as a result, in fact, he ended up not using newspaper anymore because the people that he was trying to reach out to didn't read the newspaper. Yeah. And another thing was we got to learn the language that his customers used, the sort of things that they said, how they understood his services were and the language that they had to describe it. Because it's very easy to use the jargon if you're in the industry. But if all of a sudden you know that people don't use the term oil change and grease, then you can stop using it in your advertising and marketing as a mechanical firm. Yeah. Obviously, we did ask questions about customer service, but it wasn't the whole and sole focus of what he was trying to find out. And he then used that information to put back into his staff training so that the staff would communicate better, use better language as well when communicating with the customers. And it actually improved the process, and the customers really embraced it. So it was helping him at every level of his business. And we also knew that there were certain demographics that just didn't respond to surveys. So we developed a second survey that spoke to them. So, you know, it wasn't one size fits all for the survey.
What was different about that survey?
We believed that it was because there were issues that went on in their life. For example, this particular demographic was just a bit busier, so they had less time to spend, you know, helping us develop the business. So we developed a shorter survey, for example.
Right.
And we sent them out a series of surveys over a longer period of time to get the answers to all of the different questions. So, you know, we'd ask them a 3-question survey rather than a 20-question survey. And then 6 months later, as we were reminding them that it was time to bring their car back to reservice their car, we'd ask them another 3 questions.
Right, okay.
Which also helped us you know, for when they came in. It wasn't about asking the questions that were going to uncover things that needed to be done with their car, but it was uncovering problems that they might have had, or, you know, a bit of reflective time allowed them to have a bit more perspective on what it was that they experienced last time. So we got just, you know, a bit more deep information for that particular demographic. It really was a fantastic experience for both his business and, as I said, you know, it really made his customers feel better rather than feeling like, here's another survey that I've got to do, what a chore.
I was going to say, did the demographics really match the responsiveness of people's willingness to reply to surveys and fill them in? And also, you mentioned different lengths of surveys. Have you ever tried anything like a difference between an email survey and a traditional piece of paper, card survey, whatever, mailing survey?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, with this same mechanic, we found that people who were 60 years and over didn't have electronic ability. They couldn't receive email. The number of 60 years and over that had email accounts was pretty low in his market. So we just developed a paper version of it and mailed that out to them. And they had huge amounts of time because most of them were retirees and genuinely wanted to give us feedback. So we would send that out with a replied paid envelope. Sometimes the surveys would go out with incentives to entice people to fill out the information and bring it back. You know, we did a whole range of things. We didn't just go one size fits all and, you know, dig our heels in and go, well, if they're not willing to do it on our terms, then too bad for them. They're helping us. In return, we're using that information to serve them and help them better.
Yeah, I think it's quite interesting, actually, a point you raised there about incentives. I get loads of emails from various marketers and so on who feel the need to incentivize with iPads or stuff like that, if you do this, that and the other. And everybody that fills in a survey response will put in a draw for an iPad, you know, and they're obviously hoping to get 10,000 responses to make it worthwhile or whatever for them. But I do something similar to what you mentioned, which is people buy some of my items and downloads and freebies and stuff that I have from time to time, guides and stuff like that. And I usually follow up with a survey, a really short survey. It's only one or two questions. But so many people are willing to do that. You know, I offer no incentive for that other than we value your feedback. And people, I think, kind of feel valued to be able to have input and give a response. And if you frame it in the right way, there's no need to feel that you have to offer incentives and so on to get really quite good responses from people.
Absolutely.
One survey that I received in the past and which I've mimicked to some extent, very, very effective. It only had three questions. And obviously, you know, depending what market you're in and what kind of information you're after receiving and getting back, you may want something longer, different, whatever, to suit that. But, you know, this was a three-question survey. It said, thanks for coming along or using our services. You know, what can we do better? That was one question. The next one was, will you use us again? Which is an obvious follow-up because you want to know why. And final one, can you leave us a testimonial, some, you know, glowing reference or something like that? And, you know, people do it. I use that kind of very simple survey. People tell me, you know, what they thought of what they've got from me, additional information that they're after. And that's very valuable for, you know, future product development for me. Areas that I ought to be looking at, maybe if two or three people responding along similar lines, you sort of think, you know, there's something there. Will he use us again? You know, well, if he answers no, then you can follow up a bit later on with you suggested you might not be all that keen on using us again. You know, why not? If the first bit, you know, what can we do better, doesn't clarify, you can follow up and find out. If you get testimonials from people, you know, people love to see their name in print. If they have genuinely found your service useful, they will give you great testimonials. So very simple, doesn't cost a lot. You can get an awful lot back from it and massively valuable input into your business.
You've actually struck on a real theme of gold there too, because when you're asking questions, what you're asking is really important. You cannot afford to ask leading questions. You can't have a question that's worded so that when the person reads it, they think they know what you want them to answer, and therefore, because they're nice people, answer that way. You don't want an answer that they think you want. You want the truth.
Yeah.
You know, this is not, you know, a Jack Nicholson movie. You can't handle the truth. You've got to get the truth. And actually, one of the ways that you can do that is to ask the question multiple times in different ways.
Yeah.
You know, obviously you don't want the question to be exactly the same, but you've got to ask a question that's going to evoke sort of a double blind. So you can find out whether they've just answered a question the way they think you want it answered, or whether they're actually telling you the truth. And obviously that's something that you would have to use in a longer form survey, because, you know, in a 3-question survey, you can't do that. Otherwise, they are going to be onto you. And you tend to bury those confirmation questions, you know, 5 to 10 questions later, so that they've had time to focus on other answers and forget about what they've answered a bit further up the page, so that you're extracting that correct response. In fact, one of the reasons why electronic surveys are so good is that you can have if-then scenarios running in your questioning. So you can ask a question, and if you get one type of answer,
yes, absolutely,
then a certain question is asked as the next one. But if you get a different type of answer, then it skips that question and goes to another answer. Goes to another question. And that's really valuable. You don't want to be asking them questions that, if you've got the right answer, or you've got an answer that is genuinely, you know, in the direction that is going to be beneficial, then you can skip questions. And that if-then scenario, that is a really powerful tool. You know, all of a sudden, a questionnaire that was 20 questions long might become 3.
Yeah.
Because what they've done is in their answers, they've actually told you that they're not the people that you're looking for. You know, these are not the droids you're looking for. And you just move on. You don't waste their time, and they don't waste yours.
Yeah, indeed. And some types of questions can be very powerful for research purposes as well as feedback purposes. And they can be incredibly short surveys as a result. If you are wary of bombarding your recipients of the email survey with, oh God, I want to do a 15-minute survey, I haven't got 15 minutes. Just contrary to what you were saying earlier on, maybe, but you could stick out a question, and depending what type of market it is, and what is the one main obstacle that you face in your XYZ business at the moment? What is the one thing that you would like to see us offer as a business to you if it's a consumer-orientated business? Single questions, open-ended questions that really lead people to provide a good reply, because it's what they're interested in. They acknowledge the fact that, you know, they're missing something, they need something, they want something. If you could offer it, they'd use you. It's an answer to their problem. People respond to that really, really well. And I did that once with a very simple question. Some people had basically downloaded something from me, and it took them to a thank you for downloading page. Now please fill in our, can you please fill in our single question survey? And the single question survey was, what's the main thing holding you back from developing your website, or something like that. Gee, I've got hundreds of responses. And do you know, out of all those responses, there were like 3 themes that ran through them. You could split all those responses into more or less 3 different sets of answers, which just said, okay, to me as somebody that was looking to provide answers for people, it said, right, this is what I need to address. I need to address this as well. And then I'll think about addressing that one. So, you know, incredibly simple but powerful and effective tool for telling you as a business owner where you need to be headed. Surveys, cracking thing. And as David said earlier on, you know, electronic surveys, you can set them up through autoresponders. There's different services.
SurveyMonkey.
Yeah, SurveyMonkey. Use that one.
JotForm, have you ever used JotForm?
I haven't used that
JotForms
one.
JotForms are great and free as well.
Oh, right, okay. Last year I've changed my email autoresponder service provider and so on, built it into... swapped it to a provider that also has a lot of automation and rules and so on that you can set up. So I have things where surveys go out, and like you say, depending what the answers are, depends whether you go down this route or that route or whatever route. These tools, they're powerful and they're readily available. And you know, as you say, some are free and some maybe cost a little bit more, like the one I use. But it's nothing to stop somebody, a small business owner, getting totally invaluable feedback for next to nothing, really, in terms of cost.
And you do have to be mindful, though, of who you're asking the questions of, because just totally coincidentally, I received a letter in the mail today, snail mail, from the local university, letting me know that they would be contacting me via phone shortly to do a survey for them, because I fitted into the profile that they were trying to interview. And the thing that put me off was, in that letter they said, it won't take a lot of your time, 20 to 30 minutes. And I don't know about you, but 20 to 30 minutes is a really long time. I am really busy. And while I don't mind helping the university, 20 to 30 minutes is a long
time.
Too
much.
Yeah. So depending on how my day is going, I may not take that phone call.
Is there anything in it for you?
No, there was no incentive for me other than, actually wanting to help the university in their quest to, do whatever it was that they were doing. That part I don't mind. But if they said, could we make a time to do this survey with you? It will take 20 to 30 minutes. Please go to this website and enter a time that would be convenient for you. Then I'd be much more likely to do it because I can book that time in my diary. But to get a random phone call that could occur, at any time of the day, I could be with a client, I could be, doing any number of things, it just might not be convenient. And that means that they're going to say, well, could we possibly call you back at another time? Absolutely. Can I make a time with you now? And I bet that they'll say, oh, look, sorry, we can't do it that way because we're a bunch of PhD students who are, calling you at recess time.
that's fair enough. You mentioned in the intro to this episode, research and surveys, and I think we've kind of gone over that reasonably well, different methods and so on. That would lead on to testing and measuring. Explain a little bit more. Is this feedback from the, what's the testing side of things and the measuring side?
Okay, so when you've gained your intelligence from the survey, then what you want to do is test it to make sure that the way you've understood what people have told you is correct. So you take that knowledge, turn it into something that's going to obviously help you and help them, test it against a group of clients, and then measure the response. Did that increase sales? Did it help your upsells? Did it provide smoother communication with your customers, which resulted in more frequent transactions? So you don't have to test it on everybody all at once. You can create a small test scenario and test it out, find out what the results were, assess those results, and then start to implement your outcome on a wider basis. So, let's say you test out doing something differently on Thursdays, for example, if you wanted to just run the test on a Thursday or for a cluster of clients. It's going to depend on, the type of business. If we use the mechanics again as an example, you may literally decide to test it out on a particular day of the week. Let's say that the intelligence that you gained showed that people wanted to be dropped to work as a result of dropping their car off to being serviced. So on Thursdays, you offer that as a service to everybody who's booked their car in, but you then obviously need to know, well, can they have their car in by a particular time so that we can get them to where they need to be? Do you take people in groups and drop them off, one after the other? Do you need a little bus to drop them off? Or, so you've got to be able to work out a system so that you can implement it and test the result and then measure, the feedback.
Okay, David, that was that's a pretty good example. Thanks for that. I think we're doing pretty well on this episode, actually. Shall we call it a day, then, mate?
So let's pull up stumps, but given, Australia's results in the cricket in England this summer, perhaps not.
Hey, we could do our own little bit of research and surveying on this. If you want to let us know what you think about what we cover in these episodes, leave us some comments down below underneath this episode on the Facebook page, on iTunes. We have a regular roundup of where you can leave feedback for us. We have our website, www.davidversusdavid.com. The Facebook page is facebook.com/davidversusdavid. And you can also go visit us at iTunes. There's a nice big link there on the website. You can go straight there and hopefully leave us a nice big 5-star review with glowing testimonial as to how wonderful we are. Of course, we love that kind of thing, don't we, David?
Absolutely. In fact, let me just say thanks very much to Darren Garlick, who contacted me during the week and gave us a bit of feedback on the podcast. He really enjoyed the one that we did on phone directories. So thanks very much, Darren. Thanks for the feedback. We always love to hear from podcast listeners.
From here in the sunny UK, I'm going to continue enjoying the rest of our glorious September, I hope. Goodbye from me.
Yeah, and from here in Tasmania, I'm going to promote a stereotype. I'm actually going off to barbecue some food for dinner. So it's Hawaiian shirts on and chill the margaritas because it's goodbye from me in paradise. Goodbye.
Goodbye from me too. Goodbye.
You have just been listening to the David versus David podcast with David Pritchard and David Council, helping you get knockout results with your online marketing and advertising. Please keep in mind that the ideas, opinions, and information shared in the show are those of the hosts and do not reflect those of their past employers.